Live from the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man with your host, Hank Hanegraaff. The Bible Answer Man is on the air because truth matters. To get on today's program, call 888-ASK-HANK. That's 888-275-4265. And now, here's the host of the Bible Answer Man, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. It's always great to be in studio as we answer your questions throughout the United States and Canada. Do remember, Monday through Friday at this time, your question answered on air when you dial 888-ASK-HANK. The importance of essential Christian doctrine can hardly be overstated. To begin with, these are the very doctrines that form the line of demarcation between the kingdom of Christ and the kingdom of the cults. Essential Christian doctrine is the North Star by which the course of Christianity is set. As the North Star is an unchanging reference point, a point by which sailors safely guided their ships, so essential Christian doctrine has safely guided the church through the doctrinal storms that have sought to sink it. Essential Christian doctrine is the foundation on which the gospel of Jesus Christ rests, from his deity to the eschatological certainty that he will appear again a second time to judge the living and the dead. Essential Christian doctrine is foundational to the gospel. All other religious constructs, they compromise, they confuse, they contradict essential Christian doctrine. Muslims, for example, dogmatically denounce the doctrine of Christ's unique deity as the unforgivable sin of shirk. They readily affirm the sinlessness of Christ, but adamantly deny his sacrifice on the cross, as well as his subsequent resurrection as the only hope of salvation. In order to internalize what you believe, in other words, essential Christian doctrine, the main and plain things of the Bible, I've organized them around a memorable acronym. It is the acronym DOCTRINE. To master why you believe what you believe, I've organized the supporting evidence into easy-to-assimilate bullet points. Essential Christian doctrine, again, the line of demarcation between the kingdom of Christ and the kingdom of the cults, is now available in a handy 4x6 laminated flip chart, which you can order online at equip.org. You can order via the mail at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. Or as always, you can order by talking to our resource consultants at 888-7000-CRI. But this is just one more example of a ready resource that you can acquire from the Christian Research Institute as a way of equipping yourself to always be ready to give an answer, a reason for the hope that lies within you, with gentleness and with respect. Again, check it out on the World Wide Web at equip.org. Let's go right to the phone lines. A lot of you hanging on. First up is Pam. She's listening on the web in Due West, South Carolina. Hi, Pam.
Hello, Hank. So glad to talk to you. I just discovered your ministry about 4 or 5 months ago, and I have learned so much, but I just have become a Christian, I guess, maybe 2 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And you have really cleared some things up. But one question on Proverbs 27, verse 14, where it says, a blessing given loudly and cheerfully in the morning. Why is that considered a curse? I don't understand that verse.
Yeah, remember that Proverbs are truisms. They're generally true. And what is being communicated in Proverbs at this point by Solomon is that if a man loudly, and the emphasis there is on the word loudly, blesses his neighbor early in the morning, it will be taken as a curse. Well, why would that be? Well, think about it. Timing, we might say, is everything. The wrong time for a wonderful action is still a woeful thing. You don't want to curse someone loudly, nor do you want to bless someone loudly, particularly if it's early in the morning.
You're not speaking in like it's blessing as a curse, right?
No. I'm just saying, okay. I'm saying either case, if you're doing something loudly in the morning, it's going to be taken as a curse. And I think this is related to what you read in Ecclesiastes. There's a time for everything, a season for every activity under heaven, a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to uproot, a time to kill, a time to steal, a time to tear down, a time to build, a time to weep, a time to laugh. There's a time for everything. All of that, of course, has to be contextualized. You can, for example, lie, but only if it's a greater good. In other words, Rahab purposed to lie to save the Israelites from certain destruction. So the greater good was the saving of life. So there's a time for everything. If you do something at the wrong time, it still will be considered a curse. That's the point.
Okay. All right. I just didn't understand that, but you've cleared it up for me.
And probably what's going on as well.
May God continue blessing you. I really appreciate and love listening to you.
Thank you, Pam. Appreciate your call. And I was going to say what's probably going on as well is there some reason to suspect the motive here? It's probably a hypocrite, someone going to great lengths to create the impression of friendship when in reality there's no real friendship intended. There's a lot we can read into the possible meaning of that proverb. Want to go back to the phone lines now, talk to Robert listening on Sirius 161 in Sacramento, California. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Hank. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
My call revolves around the topics of divorce and remarriage.
Yeah.
So about 5 years ago, while I was still an unbeliever, I obtained a divorce. And from what I understand from talking to my pastor, that was under illegitimate grounds for divorce. I mean, there wasn't any sexual reasons. We just decided we're no longer compatible and want to work on it. So we decided to get divorced, and then we were divorced about several months later. You know, we talked a little bit, I broached the subject of reconciling. She wasn't interested, and, you know, about a year after that or so, I became a believer. At that point, what obligations do I have to her, if any, in terms of, like, trying to reconcile the marriage?
Is she remarried?
She is not remarried, and she is still an unbeliever.
Yeah, I think as long as the door to reconciliation remains open, I would pursue reconciliation. I would do it in a way that's glorifying to God, because as a new believer, you are a new creation in Christ. In fact, as a new believer, when you're baptized, you're symbolizing that you were buried to your old life, raised to newness of life through his resurrection power. And that needs to be manifest to your ex-wife, that there has been a change in you, a change that is not just articulated by the words you speak, but a change that is demonstrated by both your life and your love. So again, I would pursue reconciliation. Obviously, you cannot force it. You can't force anyone else to reconcile. Reconciliation, at the end of the day, is always going to be a two-way street. It takes someone that is willing to forgive and someone that is wanting to be forgiven. If those two aspects aren't there, reconciliation doesn't take place. But I think that as long as the door to reconciliation remains open, I would pursue that. Once that door is closed, if it's closed through death or remarriage, well, then you can't unscramble the egg. But right now, there's still a possibility, and I think as a Christian, you want to pursue that possibility.
Okay. How do I, from my understanding, it's contrary to marry a non-believer now that I am a believer. How do I make sense of that?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think you could use that as a sort of a obstacle or an excuse for failing to reconcile. I don't think at this point, having been married to your ex-wife, that I would look at that as a significant obstacle. I would more look at the possibility of having her heart changed. Because, look, if her heart isn't changed, there isn't going to be reconciliation anyway, and likely only reconciliation will take place if she becomes yoked to Christ and as a result of that sees the possibility of being re-yoked to you.
Okay, so if I, now it sounds like the ball is in my court to pursue reconciliation, is there any sort of like time frame I need to give her, like maybe write her a letter, give her some time to think about it, and after, say if she responds and I understand I should work towards reconciliation. However, she says, you know, I'm not interested. It's over between us. What would my stance be at that point?
Well, I think this is a fluid situation. There's going to be all kinds of converging factors. And as a result of that, I think it's ill-advised for me to give you specific, detailed advice. If she does this, I'll do this. If she does this, I'll do that. I think that would be a mistake on my part, less than circumspect. I think what is necessary is someone who can deal with you specifically in a very fluid situation, which is to say, within the context of a church, a pastor or gifted Christian laymen who are expert at dealing in these kinds of circumstances would be a great deal of help to you. It's analogous to having boots on the ground, people that love you, that are a support network that can help you through a very difficult situation. I can give you general principles, but getting into the specificity I think would be dangerous because, again, it's a fluid situation which requires counselors that are with you in that fluid situation.
I understand. Thank you so much for your time and your help. Appreciate it. God bless you.
You got it. Thank you so much for your call as well. Want to go back to the phone lines now and talk to Veronica. She's listening on WMFJ, Orange Park, Florida. Hi, Veronica.
Hi, Hank. How are you? God bless you, and I'm fine, too.
Thank you.
I'm looking for the Lord's return. I think about it every day. I look forward to it. I'm a Christian. I've been a Christian for 40 years, and I've walked with the Lord, and I love Him. But I'm having struggles in the flesh, and I'm just wondering, when the Lord returns, if I'm smoking or drinking or doing something like that, is that going to disqualify me from the rapture, from being taken with the Lord?
Well, first of all, there are some presuppositions in that question that I wouldn't necessarily adhere to, but in terms of your general question, let me say this. That you are saved by God's grace through faith in Jesus Christ alone.
I believe that.
Right. You're not saved by your righteousness. You're
saved by the righteousness of Christ and the blood that He shed for me. That's what I claim.
Right. And so here's what happens. The one who justifies you, Veronica, is also the one who sanctifies you, daily conforms you to His image. The one who begins the work in you completes the work in you. So if you have a habit and you have a hard time breaking that habit, that does not exclude you from the kingdom. In fact, you might get into the kingdom quicker than you think.
Yes, that's the thing. I'm not taking care. I'm sinning against my body, and I recognize that. The Word says that. But I love the Lord, and I have a really good, I can't say good relationship with Him. I'm not being totally obedient to Him in my actions, but I love Him with all my heart, and I know He knows my heart, and I accept that I am saved by His grace alone, and by His, and I've accepted that gift, but I still, you know, I witness to my family, and I want my children to know the truth, because I want them to. I don't know. You know, I just wonder if I'm being a bad testimony for them to know whether they're going to be saved in the rapture or not. And
well, I think you want to be a good testimony in everything that you do. I think that's critical.
Yeah.
But here's the point. You need to learn to exercise spiritual disciplines. I can say I want to be a great golfer, but it takes more than simply mouthing the Nike, just do it slogan.
Practice, right?
It means exercising the fundamentals of the game of golf, and that same thing applies to the Christian life. It means exercising the very spiritual disciplines that Jesus Christ modeled during his earthly sojourn. I wrote about that in a book called The Covering, God's Plan to Protect You from Evil, and I think that book would be a real help to you right now, Veronica, and I'll be happy to give you a copy as my gift to you if you'll just hang on and if you promise that you'll read through it.
My heart is grieved so many times because I'm not walking in purity and holiness before the Lord.
Well, that's a good sign that you love the Lord, and we're all in that circumstance. When I say all, even the Apostle Paul, who said, I know that nothing good lives in me that is in my sinful nature, for I have the desire to do what is good, but I cannot carry it out, for what I do is not the good I want to do, no, the evil I do not want to do, this I keep on doing. So Paul, who is our exemplar in many ways, struggled with the sinful nature as well. Remember again, you are saved by his righteousness. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. Our website, equip.org, has an abundance of resources to equip you to think Christianly. Not only do we provide books, videos, and well-researched articles, but you can also listen to the broadcast live, download archived shows, get answers to pressing Bible questions, and follow our blog or connect with us on Facebook and Twitter. You can also sign up for our weekly e-newsletter and receive special benefits. All of this and more at equip.org. Again, the address is equip.org. Don't change the station. The Bible Answer Man broadcast will be right back. Now more than ever, today's believer who wants to stay informed needs to subscribe to the Christian Research Journal. Here's what you'll find in the current issue of the Christian Research Journal. The millennial generation seeks to grasp moments of experiential transcendence from the offerings of consumer culture. By following the culture's life script, young adults place themselves at the center of a disenchanted universe, making themselves idols. Get a better understanding of Generation Y in the article titled Looking Under the Surface of the Millennial Generation. Friedrich Nietzsche is the patron saint of postmodernism and may currently be the most influential of the great philosophers. Learn how to respond to Nietzsche's anti-God, anti-truth philosophy in Hendrik Vanderbreggen's article, Awakening from the Nightmare. Other topics include Mormon evangelism, theistic evolution, and much more.
Call CRI and start your subscription today, 888-7000-CRI, or go online to equip.org.
These are the last of the last days. Oh, somewhere between 2003 and 2005, Jesus will come back.
How much longer do you think we really might have?
I don't believe we have another 10 years.
Anywhere from now till 2018, Jesus Christ will appear to set up his thousand-year kingdom of revelation.
When will Jesus come back? The consensus is as varied as the number of so-called experts you ask. So where do you turn for definitive scriptural insight on the end times? Understanding Revelation is now within your grasp. The Apocalypse Code by Hank Hanegraaff deals with today's most asked prophecy questions. It distinctively presents a method by which you can read the Bible for all it's worth. The Apocalypse Code. Find out what the Bible really says about end times and why it matters today by Hank Hanegraaff. Now available in softcover, you can order by calling 888-7000-CRI or by going online to equip.org. As followers of the Lord Jesus Christ, we must learn to think Christianly. To do so, we need to steep ourselves in God's Word so that everywhere we look, we discern the lies of our culture against a backdrop of truth. Then we can use what we know to speak to the lost in a language they will understand. The Culturally Savvy Christian by Dick Staub is a book that skillfully exposes the shallowness of contemporary pop culture and shows how millions of Christians have been led astray. But Staub goes beyond diagnosis to healing prescription, laying out practical guidelines you can use to safely engage our culture every day. As good ambassadors, we must understand the world we live in and transform it just as Christ and his disciples did. To order The Culturally Savvy Christian for your gift to the ministry of the Christian Research Institute, call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. Has the Bible Answer Man broadcast impacted your life? Have you been equipped to defend your faith? If so, consider becoming a Bible Answer Man support team member. In doing so, you'll be making an eternal investment in a ministry that equips believers to discern truth from error and to think Christianly about life's most important questions. As a new member of the Bible Answer Man support team, we will send you a copy of the complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition, personalized by Hank. The Complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition is an indispensable resource that will not only provide answers to your questions, but equip you to answer questions raised by family and friends. To join the Bible Answer Man support team, just go to equip.org/donate. Again, that's equip.org/donate. Or call a resource consultant at 888-7000-274. And now, once again, here's the host of the Bible Answer Man, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. And a quick reminder personally as well to say that we need many of you to join the monthly Bible Answer Man support team. You can do that, again, in a safe, secure fashion on the World Wide Web at equip.org. And when you join this month, I will be happy to personalize a copy of the complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition to you, a friend, or a family member. Again, you can ask for the complete Bible Answer Book personalized for your gift of $100 or more to the ongoing work of the Christian Research Institute as well. So two ways, one, a one-time gift of $100 or more, or when you join the monthly Bible Answer Man support team. Again, you can do that in a safe, secure fashion on the World Wide Web at equip.org. You can write me at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. Or as always, when you talk to our resource consultants, 888-7000-CRI. Back to the phone lines. We'll talk next to Maria. She's listening in Fort Mill, South Carolina. Hi, Maria.
Hey, Hank. How are you? We love your ministry, my husband and I. I have a question which has to do with Freemasonry in the church, especially in leadership. I go to a Southern Baptist church, we're kind of devastated that we found out some of this information. And upon going to speak to the leader about it, we were told that he does not have an issue with them, a problem with them. What can we do? Because we don't want to sit under that, number one. And two, are there any truth-teaching churches that you can recommend to us in the Fort Mill, Rock Hill, Charlotte area?
Yeah, we'll be able to recommend a number of good churches to you. You're never going to find a perfect church, but what you want is...
No, we're not, we just don't... We know that. We just do not want to deal with the deception of that in the leadership.
Yeah, and I think that's an appropriate response on your part. Freemasonry is not compatible with Christianity. One is
No, it isn't. I've gone to your website. I've read it. I've done a lot of research in the last few days online, and I was just appalled.
Yeah, so I think with gentleness and with respect, you need to let the leadership know that, know why you're leaving, and then find a healthy, well-balanced church. And if you hang on, we'll be happy to help you in that regard.
That would be awesome. Thank you so much.
You got it. Thank you so much for your call, Maria. And back to the phone lines. We'll talk next to Joe. He's listening on Sirius 161 in Portland, Oregon. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Hank. Thanks for taking my call.
Pleasure.
I've been trying to take the Bible seriously these days. And along the way, there seems to be a lot of criticism I'm hearing, particularly on how the Bible is a bunch of stories. And one in particular has been bothering me recently is how the epic tale of Gilgamesh parallels Noah and the flood, and also how the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John were written by others. I was wondering if I could get your thoughts on those.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's easy to say that the Gospels were written pseudonymously. The proof, however, is not there. In fact, the kind of proof that is used is very flaky at best. It sounds good, but under examination, it simply doesn't hold water. The evidence that John, for example, wrote the Gospel of John and wrote the book of Revelation and the epistles is very clear for a number of reasons, including his fingerprints are all over the manuscript. I'm speaking metaphorically, of course, but what I'm saying is the similarity in style between John and between the book of Revelation is absolutely stunning. And the argument that John couldn't have written it because he was unlettered or he didn't have the credentials or he was illiterate is simply false. Imagine spending 3 years with a master teacher. You would come out of that process with a great deal of knowledge, a great deal of wisdom, and you would hardly be considered illiterate. There's much more that could be said. I'm writing about that specifically in a book that will be published this year in September called Has God Spoken? As far as the Epic of Gilgamesh is concerned, yeah, the Epic of Gilgamesh is a Babylonian account of the flood. It's a corrupted account. It reminds us, though, that the reality of the flood is impregnated on the collective consciousness of virtually every major civilization. Not only that, but with all its failings, the Epic of Gilgamesh is yet a significant archaeological treasure because it is wholly plausible to presume that the significant similarities between Genesis and Gilgamesh are best explained by a common inheritance. In other words, both accounts derive from the same source. They both derive from the actual event. So there was a flood, and both the Bible and the epic record the flood. And as the descendants of Noah drifted far apart and away from God, there must have been a long parade of human corruptions and polytheistic incrustations on the original and actual event, which is what you find when you start reading flood accounts in general. And then I would say this, it's crucial to note that the existence of corrupted flood accounts actually serve to underscore the reality of a real McCoy. And that is precisely what the Genesis account affords. It's written as history, and it corresponds to reality. So if you look at the cube-shaped ark that is supposed by the Babylonian epic, you find it's not seaworthy. Conversely, if you look at Noah's ark, it turns out to be completely seaworthy, the kind of ship that is ideally suited for a great flood. So, again, there's a lot more that could be said, but while people use this as a means of making fun of the Bible or spoofing the Bible, the sport is short-lived once you start looking at the facts.
Okay, thank you very much, Hank.
Hey, you got it. And again, I'm writing about that in detail. It's one of the great archaeological treasures. And actually, when you look at the details, it's quite a fascinating story, you find that it actually lends credence to the genuine Genesis account and therefore becomes an apologetic for the Bible rather than being an apologetic against the Bible. I want to go back to the phone lines now. Talk to Gary listening on Bot Radio in Edmond, Oklahoma. Hi, Gary.
Hello.
Hi. You may want to turn your radio down.
Number one, I want to tell you how honored I am to visit with you, number one. And two, your collector's edition is phenomenal. If I could just figure out a way to hold on to one, I keep giving them away. And the most recent to my daughter, who just started college, and her religion class is using it.
Oh, wow.
My question to you is this. My small group is studying the second edition of Billy Graham's book on angels. I know your stance on the existence. My question is, to what extent or what part do angels play in our human everyday life? And I'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
And this is in the context of Romans 8:38, I believe. And then how to discern an angel from demonic beings.
Yeah, in fact, the second part of your question actually leads to the answer that I was going to give you. Let's look at the opposite side of the coin for just a moment. We fight against the world, the flesh, and the devil, don't we? But even in fighting the world, the flesh, and the devil, we are called to put on the full armor of God so that we can stand against the wiles of the evil one. It's never our prerogative to try to figure out where's the temptation coming from. Is this the world, the flesh, or the devil? Very hard to delineate between those three categories. So what we do is we put on the full armor of God so that we can withstand the wiles of the evil one. If we put on the full armor of God, we are going to survive spiritual warfare. If we do not, we're going to be a guaranteed casualty. And I think the same thing is true with angels. Angels are ministering spirits, but we don't know precisely how God uses them in our life. We know in principle from texts like the text in Romans 8, but we do not know with specificity in any particular circumstance that we encounter in life. So maybe sometime in eternity when we see face to face and see clearly, we'll have an idea of what happened. I don't know. But right now, it's very difficult for us to figure out what role angels play with regard to any specific circumstance.
But would you deny the fact that they are excuse me, that they are present, that they...
No, absolutely, I would not deny that.
Okay.
We can't deny that on the basis of biblical theology. I mean, the reality is angels are real and demons are real, and just as demons can be used as those that lead us into deception, so angels can be used by God in a ministering capacity. So I don't deny that at all. I'm simply saying that taking any given specific circumstance in your life, it's very difficult to directly apply an angel to the process and say, well, this was done by a ministering angel, just as it's very difficult for you to say the temptation came from a particular demon. What we know is that we are going to be tempted in general by the world, the flesh, and the devil. Which one is the instrument at any given moment is something that we cannot be absolutely certain of.
Excellent. But that does lead to a logical question, and that is, if God uses an individual, you know, sometimes you cross paths with people that I don't believe in accidents. That doesn't, they often may say, you know, you're my guardian angel or you're my angel or whatever. That technically is not true.
Well, the person itself, you mean?
For the person who was a helper to another.
Yeah, it's a metaphorical way of speaking of that person. You're saying something very complimentary about that person, saying, as God has ministering angels, you have been that in my life. So it's used in a metaphorical sense, and I think appropriately so.
Okay, not irreverently. All right, well, again, your collector's edition, hopefully I'll be able to hold on to one. So God bless your ministry, and I listen daily.
Thank you so much, Gary. You've been a great encouragement to me. Thank you so much for your call. And do remember, Monday through Friday at this time, your question answered on air. When you dial 888-ASK-HANK, that translates to 888-275-4265. We'll be right back on the other side of the break with some very interesting questions, including whether or not I believe in preterism. Also, an unbeliever with Alzheimer's, how to witness. A lot of interesting questions right around the corner. Stay tuned. Please don't touch that dial.
The Christian Research Journal is a one-of-a-kind magazine, combining eye-catching graphics with trustworthy content you can depend on. Get a biblical perspective on current events, religious movements, and cultural trends, and gain the discernment skills you need to defend the faith. Start your subscription today by calling 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-274. Or subscribe online at equip.org. That's equip.org. The Bible Answer Man with Hank Hanegraaff will be right back after this.
It is reading and interpreting the passage in light of what the Bible says, not my imagination.
You've always appreciated the thoughtful, biblically based answers you hear from Hank on the Bible Answer Man. But how can you benefit from Hank's input and instruction in your personal quiet times? You can with the Legacy Study Bible. Hank Hanegraaff has helped to assemble what could be the most helpful Bible you've ever read. Informative and educational articles are written by Hank using acronyms that he regularly uses on the Bible Answer Man, including LIGHTS, showing how to understand the Bible, MAPS, demonstrating how the Bible is divinely inspired and preserved, DOCTRINE, summarizing essential Christian doctrine, and FEAT, an apologetic on Christ's resurrection.
Order the Legacy Study Bible, edited by Hank Hanegraaff, by calling 888-7000-CRI or online at www.equip.org. Don't forget to ask about the personalized edition.
Multitudes of Christians have been given a wildly distorted understanding of the biblical teaching about faith. In the late 20th century, Word of Faith teachers such as Kenneth Hagin and Benny Hinn were at the fore.
The Bible declares clearly that faith is a force.
In the early 21st century, they are overshadowed by a new breed of prosperity preachers with rock star platforms like Joel Osteen and Paula White.
God said to challenge the people to give $66.12 according to Psalm 66:12. When you put your faith with the word, then you have mandated results.
Hank gives hope and truth to the millions trapped in the faith movement in his landmark book, Christianity in Crisis, 21st Century. To get your copy of Christianity in Crisis, 21st Century, call 888-7000-CRI or go online at www.equip.org. Don't forget to ask about the autographed and limited leather editions.
The Complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition by Hank Hanegraaff is the culmination of over 20 years of faithful study and answering questions on the Bible Answer Man broadcast. With short, succinct answers to over 170 questions that stumbled seekers and galvanized skeptics against the historic Christian faith, the Complete Bible Answer Book will give you confidence in what you believe and why you believe it. Written in Hank's concise, three-point, easy-to-memorize fashion, the Complete Bible Answer Book is an essential tool for the beginner as well as the seasoned apologist. Consider it your one-stop Christian apologetics handbook. When you become a Bible Answer Man support team member, we'll send you the Complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition as our way of saying thank you. Order for yourself, a friend, or get a personalized copy when you call 888-7000-CRI. Or go online to equip.org. In Romans 12:2, Paul writes, "Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's perfect will is." The Culturally Savvy Christian by Dick Staub is a book that will teach you to be serious about your faith, savvy about faith and culture, and skilled in relating the two according to God's will. When you support the Christian Research Institute this month, we'll send you Dick Staub's The Culturally Savvy Christian. And remember that your gift, great or small, creates truth-filled resources that equip more Christians to become change agents in our culture. To donate, contact us at 888-7000-CRI or go to equip.org. Let's return now to the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy, and let me add my praise to Dick Staub's book, The Culturally Savvy Christian. It's a manifesto for deepening faith and enriching popular culture in an age of Christianity light. N.T. Wright, former Bishop of Durham, said this is a urgent book for our times and, of course, for our spiritual health. The Culturally Savvy Christian, again, available for your gift to the ongoing work of the Christian Research Institute. Just check it out on the World Wide Web at equip.org. You can write me at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. As always, resource consultants, they're standing by, 888-7000. And the letter CRI. Back to the phone lines. We'll talk next to Brian. He's listening at XM 170 in Valencia,
California. Hi, Brian.
Hi. I just had a quick question about the woman that Jesus met at the well in John's Gospel in chapter 4.
Yeah.
John wrote that she was a Samaritan woman, and she had asked Jesus what the business was being a Jew talking to her as a Samaritan. There's two things. One, usually guys that, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't really have any dealings or public speakings with women. And secondly, Jews, as she stated, didn't have much connection with Samaritans. But she mentions later on that something about Jacob being her father and that being her well that she was at. Where am I missing the connection between her having validity in her claim stating that was her father's well?
Well, first of all, I think you've assessed the situation correctly. I think it's right to say that there's a point being made here, that point being for a Samaritan to speak of Jacob as our father would have been offensive to an ancient Jew, who viewed his or herself as the true children of Jacob, while the Samaritans were considered an impure people or half-breeds. You have to remember how they came about with the exile and annihilation of the Northern Kingdom. What happened was there were some people who were left, and they were generally considered by the Assyrians to be the dregs of society. The Assyrians then repopulated the Northern Kingdom or that territory, and as a result of interbreeding, you have the Samaritans. So from a Jewish standpoint, the Samaritans were considered nothing but dogs. Not only that, but ancient civilizations, including the Jewish civilization, put women on a substandard level. In other words, they were on the lowest level of the socioeconomic ladder. But Jesus Christ, remember, sees things as they are. He is the creator of male and female. He is the one who inspired Paul's words that in Christ there's neither male nor female, there's neither slave nor free, and there's neither Jew nor Greek. So from Christ's perspective, no problem whatsoever speaking to a woman, nor does he consider her anything less. In fact, in his words, he is in essence breaking down all of the stereotypes. Because if you look at the content of what he's saying, she's wondering whether you worship in a temple in Gerizim or whether you worship in a temple in Jerusalem, and the temple, not built by human hands, ironically, is standing in front of her.
Right. And that's why he said that you guys don't know what you worship, but we worship what we do know. My question is, so is it because of what Assyria had done while taking occupancy of the Northern Kingdom? Does she have, I mean, not that it really matters, it's just something that caught my eye. Does she have validity in saying that this is my father's well, or is it just because a mutilation of tradition?
No, she's got absolute right to say that in the truest of all senses. Remember Jacob, his name was changed to Israel, and he had 12 tribes. And Jesus
right.
Christ is of the tribe of Jacob through lineage. Okay. Jesus Christ, however, is true Israel. And true Israel is always reckoned not by race, but rather by relationship. So the Jews who viewed Samaritans as dogs or half-breeds were simply wrong. They were no more dogs or half-breeds than Rahab was. Rahab was a Canaanite.
Mm-hmm.
Ruth was a Moabite, the arch-enemy of Israel, and yet in the lineage of Jesus Christ. Why? Mm-hmm. Not by ethnicity, but rather by relationship. And this is the thing that many people miss. In the Old Testament, people are related to God as a result of spirituality, not in terms of genealogy.
As a means of faith.
Yes, it's always a means of faith. Yeah, in fact, look, if you look at the, I think it's the last verse in Esther chapter 8, but I don't remember off the top of my head. If you go to the last verse, you will see that the people are looking at Esther as she is being sovereignly raised up to save the Jews from certain destruction under Haman. And as they look on, they see how God has sovereignly used Esther. And what the text tells us is that on that day, many different people from many different nations became Jews. Mm-hmm. Well, how did they do that? They didn't do that by changing their birth mother. They did that because they believed in Yahweh, the God of Israel, and therefore they were brought into all the types and shadows pointing forward to Christ.
As Paul, I think, said, one is not a Jew outwardly, where the circumcision is done by man's hands, but done by the hand of God on the heart.
Precisely. Yes, yes. Not the circumcision of the flesh, but the circumcision of the heart. Yeah.
I find it interesting, and thank you for your time. I find it interesting he never rebuked her for making that claim, but he challenged her in what she worshipped.
Yes.
Thank you for your time, Hank.
Hey, you got it, and thank you for your insights as well. Appreciate your call. Let's go back to the phone lines, talk to Ezekiel. He's listening on KLCV in Lincoln, Nebraska. Hi, Ezekiel.
Hi, how you doing, Hank?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Hey, my question is, how can you witness to a person that's got Alzheimer's? She's in her 80s. Her relatives go to a Christian church, but she was only involved, you know, as religiously, not as a believer. And the second question is, what's your take on cremation? When a person dies, they cremate her to, you know, save money, or what is your take on that?
Yeah, well, a couple of things. First of all, with respect to the 80-year-old lady, I would say treat her with love and dignity and respect, care for her in all ways, testify to her by your life and by your love. It may be that she cannot remember or recognize your words, but she can sense and feel and experience your love. As far as her relationship to the Lord is concerned, also remember that anyone that desires a relationship with the Lord knows about that. He knows the intents of the heart, and he will never cast that person away. So I don't think that we can presume to be the judge. What we can presume to do is be faithful in our interactions with anyone regardless of their condition. As far as cremation is concerned, recognize this, that God has no problem whatsoever resurrecting the cremated, but cremation does not point to the resurrection of God. And therefore, the preferred method of burial is to bury a body rather than to burn the body. Because cremation in its Eastern worldview looks to escape from the body as opposed to resurrection, which points to the preservation of the body. Mm-hmm. So it's the testimony that resurrection is when you see a body in a casket and you can say that body lying in the casket will one day rise immortal, imperishable, incorruptible. That body will be changed. So it becomes an object lesson, an opportunity to speak both to believers and unbelievers about the reality of the resurrection, which in a Christian worldview is very physical and not Platonic. So it's never escape from the body as though the body is an unuseful or an evil kind of a substance, and so the moment we can escape it, the sooner the better. That's not the Christian worldview. We look forward to resurrection of the body, and that ultimately is the hope. Now, if you have cremation because of expenses or whatever, and you find that's the only thing you can do, remember, you can add to that a very careful, articulate communication of what the Christian belief is with respect to resurrection. So you can say, this body, which is cremated, will one day be resurrected. Why can you say that? Well, because Jesus said that. Do not be amazed at this. The time is coming when all whom the grace will come out. Some will rise to live, and some will rise to be eternally condemned. One other point I think that's significant. When we talk about resurrection of the body, that does not necessitate that every atom is resuscitated in some sense. What it necessitates is that there is continuity between the body that is and the body that will be.
I see. Now, just quick, going back to the first question, if a person, you know, like she has Alzheimer's and does she need to verbally confess, you know, do the confession of faith in order to be saved? Or is that, you know, totally out because she's got that disease?
Well, remember, Christianity is not a magical religion where you have to have exactly the right incantation and then you're saved. That's not the Christian worldview at all. You are saved by God's grace through faith on account of Jesus Christ alone. And you recognize always that it is Jesus Christ that knows the heart. We look on the exterior, God knows the heart. We cannot bring into factoring every single converging condition in a person's life, but God can do that. And so we leave that person in the hands of an infinitely just and infinitely merciful God, knowing that he will not reject anyone that wanted a relationship with him. We can't sort it all out here, but in the greatest size with people from every tongue and tribe and language and people and nation, we will see that the judge of heaven and earth does right. And we will then say, oh my goodness, he was able to take into consideration every single converging factor. His justice is absolutely pure, pristine, and you will glory in his righteousness in that day.
All right. Thank you very much.
You got it. Thank you so much for your call and for all the other calls. I am out of time for this edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Do remember, those that support this ministry prayerfully and financially, allow this voice to continue to circle the world and make a difference for time and for eternity. In other words, I'm not doing this by myself. I'm doing that because there's a big team that helps me in the Ministry of the Christian Research Institute and team members outside the Ministry of the Christian Research Institute as well. If you haven't joined the monthly support team, take an opportunity to look at the World Wide Web at equip.org and find a way to do that. It would make a big difference as you give, not to us, but through us, touching the lives of people for time and for eternity. So long for now.
You've been listening to The Bible Answer Man with Hank Hanegraaff. To hear more of The Bible Answer Man or to listen to archived broadcasts, just log on to equip.org. Equip.org is a fountain of information and resources designed to help you defend the faith and grow in your knowledge of the truth. To talk to a resource consultant by phone, call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-274. Or you can write to us at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is furnished by the Christian Research Institute. We're on the air because truth matters. Master the defense of the resurrection in minutes and remember it for a lifetime with the Hankrenem series, Resurrection, Memorable Keys to the Greatest Feat in History. The resurrection of Jesus Christ is not merely important to the historic Christian faith. Without it, there would be no Christianity. To make the facts of the resurrection memorable and easily referenced, Hank has developed the Hankrenem Feat and created the second in a series of specifically designed flip charts. Laminated, tabbed, and sized to fit in your pocket, this incredible tool will allow you to defend the truth of the resurrection on a moment's notice. Available for your gift to the Christian Research Institute when you call 888-7000-CRI or when you go online to equip.org. On one extreme, Muslims are portrayed as a mad monolith, on the other as peace-loving pacifists. In the dark days immediately following 9/11, one thing was painfully obvious. More often than not, we were being informed by rhetoric and emotional stereotypes rather than reason and empirical studies. Many of us know Muslims already in our neighborhood or workplace. And with an ever-increasing population of Muslims all over the world, we should be ready to go to them as Christ calls. Islam, What You Must Know, the best of the Christian Research Journal brings together the best articles of the Christian Research Journal on Islam to equip you to think Christianly about Muslims in order to reach them for Christ. To order this unique hardbound book on Islam, dial 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-274. Or order online at equip.org.